Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, May 30th, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week and happy Double or Nothing Day. We have AEW tonight. Really looking forward to the show. Having some friends over. Gonna be a good time. Can't wait. I'll actually give you some quick Double or Nothing predictions right at the end of this show just to throw them out there for the record. But let me go through the topics for today and we'll jump right into it. So in this edition of the Weekender, we have results for 205 Live, NXT UK, Impact Wrestling. We have the MLW Open Draft Round 2, which included a big signing that I can't wait to talk about. We have results for NWA, Ring of Honor, Being the Elite, the latest episode titled God, I Love These Shoes. And like I said, I'll wrap it up with some quick predictions for AEW Double or Nothing. But before we get started into all that, as always, I have my recommended show to watch on independentwrestling.tv, and the show that I've chosen this week is Paradigm Pro Wrestling's Terminal Combat. So once again, the show is Terminal Combat. The company is Paradigm Pro Wrestling. The concept for this show is very interesting. The way the matches were structured, it was UWFI rules for the first 5 minutes, and that's a more MMA-based style with like submissions, knockouts to finish fights. And then after the 5 minutes is up, Terminal Combat begins, which is basically a no-rules hardcore match. But there were some stipulations in there. For instance, if anybody actually interfered during the match, the person who interfered would be banned for 1 full year from the company. Like, so there was like pretty cool rules that kind of kept the integrity of what they were trying to do and keeping it one-on-one. And the same rules applied for tag team matches, only difference being that the tag team matches have the 10-minute UWFI rules. So really cool concept. Definitely something different, and I definitely applaud Paradigm Pro for the approach they've been doing lately. They've been incorporating a lot of UWFI rules, matches, and like these kind of mixed rules and stuff lately, and I think it's smart because it really helps them stand out as an independent promotion. And there's a ton of great talent on this show, a lot of matches. So this is the card if you want to check it out. We have Dominic Guarini versus Akira, Flash Thompson versus Dustin Leonard, Derek Neal vs. Lord Crew, Isaiah Bronner vs. Alex Kane, Ron Mathis vs. Josh Crane, Braden Lee vs. Austin Conley, Reed Bentley vs. John Wayne Murdoch, Bradley Prescott IV vs. Jody the Wrestler, Janae Kai vs. Sandra Moon. We had Creature Feature taking on the Jollyville Effets. We had the Midwest Territory title match, which is the MidwestTerritory.com, rather, title match, which is the big chain championship, not a title belt, the big chain. Chase Holiday taking on Yo-Yo. We had Matt Mikowski taking on Matthew Justice. And in the main event for the Paradigm Pro Heavy Hitters title, we had Bobby Beverly versus Hoodfoot Mo Atlas. So a lot of great talent, as you just heard there. I'm going to highlight some of these people. You know, I talk about Guarini all the time. I'm hoping to see him as a part of an upcoming round for MLW because I think he's a great fit with MLW and he's killing it everywhere. I always talk about Southern Underground Pro and all the great stuff he does there. Action Wrestling, the guy's killing it. I can't say enough good things about Dominic Guarini. Check out his work if you haven't already. And he's a guy who just fits so perfect into Paradigm Pro because of the UWFI and his, you know, BJJ, you know, background and everything. Green is just such a perfect fit for this kind of stuff. His opponent, Akira, part of the KOBK crew, Killer Be Killed, big fan of him. Just guy who continues to get better and better, and you can see him pretty much everywhere now. Like, he's wrestling all over the place, and yeah, I mean, he's a guy to really keep your eye on, in my opinion. He's had incredible matches and fights, and just watching him and Nolan Edward go at it back and forth. And they're also a part of the KOBK crew, you know, together. So, like, they're like frenemies. Like, they're friends, but when they fight each other, like, they really fight each other in these matches and stuff. It's pretty awesome. So, huge shout-out to Akira. We had Flash Thompson. I mean, this is a dude who he's just not for me. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I respect the dudes out there, and he works hard. But the gimmick just doesn't work for me. The whole Forgotten Fight Club doesn't work for me, especially when Bobby Beverly isn't like as involved and stuff. So it's like, I'll get to Bobby Beverly here in a minute, but yeah, Flash Thompson, once again, I respect the guy for going out there and working his butt off, but I feel like he just needs a giant gimmick change, just my personal opinion. His opponent, Dustin Leonard, a dude who looks very deceiving. Like, when you see him, you probably don't think a whole lot of him, to be honest. I mean, he's a big dude, but he's very skilled in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and has good judo throws and, you know, very good for this style of like, once again, Paradigm Pro, when they have these UWFI rule, you know, matches and these mixed rule matches slash, you know, fights and stuff like that. Dustin Leonard's a guy that just fits really perfectly into these scenarios, so I really like seeing him on this show. We had Derek Neal, who's one of my favorite wrestlers in the Southeast right now, former two-time New South heavyweight champion, a guy who he was recently announced for the Scenic City Invitational in Chattanooga, which I'm really excited about because I think he's going to do great in that tournament. He's honestly going to be one of the favorites, I think, to win that whole thing. And that's saying a lot because it's a stacked tournament. So Derek Neal, dude who has all the tools, and a guy who really wants to work for the National Wrestling Alliance, and a guy that I think really would fit in great for the NWA. I think they should really give him a look. And if they don't, I think another company will pretty soon, because he's got the size, the mic skills. It was very, very believable. So yeah, Derek Neal, very bright future for him. I feel like he hasn't even hit his prime yet. He's doing great stuff. I would highly recommend going out of your way to watch any match between Derek Neal and Cabana Man Dan. Really, really good stuff every time they wrestle each other. He wrestled Lord Crew, by the way, Derek Neal in this match. And Lord Crew's a guy who's growing on me a little bit more. A guy who was kind of in a tough position for me as a fan, because I honestly wasn't a huge fan of, like, the first few times I saw him. Like, I thought he was okay, but nothing that special. And I saw him in some matches that I just don't think he was a good fit for. Certain types of rules and stuff just didn't really fit him too well, in my personal opinion. But he is a guy who has a big following in Paradigm, and he's also a guy who a lot of wrestlers that I really respect, they say a lot of good things about Lord Crew as far as, like, them being big fans of him and them thinking he's going to be a big star, you know, in the future and stuff. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and he is growing on me, so I'm just throwing that out there for anyone who in the past has maybe heard me be a little critical on Lord Crew. That's part of where it's coming from. I have high expectations because of all the good things I've heard said about him from people that I really respect. So Lord Crew and Derek Neal, this is a good matchup. Highly recommended. I mean, we got so much good talent on the show. Alex Kane, we're going to talk about in a minute. There was really, really big news for Alex Kane. Really great news, really well-deserved news. So we're going to hold off on the Alex Kane talk until a little bit later on the show. Actually, let me go ahead and just put a little mark here to make sure that I do not forget to highlight that. Okay, perfect. After that, who else we got on here? Braden Lee, big fan of him. Great high flyer, young guy, serious potential. We've been seeing him a lot more lately, and he's been doing stuff with GCW lately, which I think is great. Getting a lot more eyes on him. Excuse me. We had Reed Bentley and John Wade Murdoch going at it. Two guys that are really known in the deathmatch world. Two guys that are crazy, and guys that have always won me over, to be honest. Like, for those of you who listen to the show often, I'm not the biggest deathmatch wrestling fan. Like, I really respect what they're doing, and I know there's a giant audience for it, but, you know, I watch a lot more deathmatch wrestling now than I did like a year ago, for instance. And Reed Bentley is a guy who is just very easy to get behind. Like, he's a very likable guy. And then, like, John Wayne Murdoch is just really, really good at what he does. Like, there's really no other way to really say it. Like, these two guys, great matchup against one another. Like, as far as, like, style versus style, it's a really good matchup. And once again, it's two guys that, you know, I normally see in, you know, deathmatch scenarios. So, you know, once again, a big variety of talent on this show. We had Bradley Prescott IV on this. Love seeing BP4 on this, because this dude, he has so much talent. He's still so young. He's done great stuff with the Lost Boys, you know, his stable and stuff. And he just doesn't veer too much outside of Paradigm Pro lately. And I don't know if that's by his own choice or I'm not sure, like, what the reasoning is, but I felt like for a while, and once again, it could be pandemic-related, you know, you never know that as well, but Bradley, like, he was really making a name for himself in multiple promotions, especially in, like, the Southeast, and, you know, Paradigm Pro runs out of Indiana, and there's a lot of wrestlers that wrestle in Indiana that would also wrestle, you know, in Chattanooga, and Nashville, and Atlanta, and around the Southeast, St. Louis, stuff like that, right? So I felt like Bradley Prescott was making a lot of momentum, gaining a lot of momentum for himself. And then now you just kind of only see him in Paradigm lately, which, he's a big name for Paradigm as far as like their audience that, I guess kind of like the repeat audience, if that makes sense. The people who go to the Paradigm shows on a regular basis, those people, like, he's very over in front of those people. And Bradley Prescott was getting himself over in other places as well, but like he's really, really over in Paradigm. So I don't know if it's a case of like him being comfortable in Paradigm, or because there's also wrestlers, to be totally honest and totally fair about it, like there are plenty of wrestlers that I've talked to. Like I've even talked to like Cabana Man Dan recently. I had an interview with him and he basically told me like he was really happy where he was at. Like he does New South Action, takes some other stuff kind of around the same area. He lives in Alabama, but he's got a really big name for himself in the places he wrestles, and he does, he's well off like for that, He hopes one day to, hopefully get a big contract with, an AEW, WWE, somewhere that he can make some real good money and get on TV and stuff. But he also said like he's also not trying to like drive and fly all over the country anymore, because like he does have a good setup for the companies that he works regularly for. So I use that as an example because it could be very similar to someone like Bradley, right? Like he might just be like, man, I'm killing it here. Like there's no real need for me to be driving all over the place. Or hell, I could be totally wrong, and it's just, once again, it could just be pandemic related. I have no idea. The point of it is I'm a big fan of BP4. And I want to see him more often. I just feel like I haven't been able to see him as often as I used to. That's the point of it. Big fan of him. Jody the Wrestler, all I'll say is keep a lookout for this guy. Definitely bring something different to the table. And him and BP4, very interesting matchup against one another. Who else was on the show? The Jollyville Efforts, the team of Russ Myers and T-Money. Those are guys that I first saw back at Glory Pro. And this would have been probably like at least 4 years ago, I think. I think it's already been that long. But man, a very good tag team. Big dudes who do a lot of really cool stuff. And a tag team that I really feel like with the current landscape of wrestling, I feel like they would be a great fit really in any company, to be honest. Like they'd be great in AEW. They'd be great in Impact. WWE, it's always hit or miss because you just never know what they're going to do with somebody once they sign them. But, I mean, they have the talent to, be a good NXT tag team and possibly main roster one day type stuff. The point is, I mean, they really fit in anywhere. I think they do great in Ring of Honor, actually, as well. I mean, there's a lot of teams in Ring of Honor that I think they would have really interesting matches with. So yeah, big fan of that team. And then Creature Feature, I like the name of the team a lot because that was a song by 311, so one of my favorite bands of all time. 311 is the band that I've definitely seen the most live in my life. Like, I've definitely seen them in the double digits amount of times live. But that's just a shout out to 311 and Creature Feature for putting that name together. Don't know if it's even that's the reason they did it, but that's just something I noticed. Chase Holiday and Yo-Yo, once again, Chase Holiday, he's a part of the Lost Boys with BP4, who I was just talking about, as well as Hoodfoot, who's in the main event. And, yeah, Holiday is a guy that I think he's solid, but I'm a bigger fan of what Yo-Yo does. I think that Yo-Yo is really fun to watch. He's a smaller guy, but he has a lot of talent, a lot of charisma. And this was an interesting matchup because, just stylistically and kind of what the two guys do, interesting matchup. And yeah, like I said, Yo-Yo, I've heard that there's already interest, at quote-unquote the next level in Yo-Yo, which was surprising when I heard it, not because of his talent. I think the talent's there, but he hasn't been, he's not a very well, he's well-known, but he's still very much under the radar. I feel like a lot of people still don't know about Yo-Yo, and his size I thought would probably be kind of an issue, just because he is on the smaller side, the much smaller side, if we're being fair. But once again, his skill, his talent, is very crisp, he's gonna just keep getting better and better. Like, he's probably years away from even hitting his prime. So And that's not to say, you know, I don't know what's going to happen for Yo's immediate future. All I know is I have talked to people in certain companies that apparently, like, they are, he is on their radar already. So to take that for what it's worth, two guys that I'm a huge fan of right now, Matt Mikowski and Matthew Justice were also on the show against each other. Mikowski, one of the best technical wrestlers out there right now, really great, like, hybrid style, does a little bit of everything, does everything really, really well. He's going to be a guy who will either generate a lot of interest and, like, move up, quote-unquote, like, really fast, I think, or he's a guy that will really fill a lot of gaps that were kind of left behind in the indies when guys like, you know, you can consider Ring of Honor an indie, I guess, but when guys like Fred Yehi and Tracy Williams and Jonathan Gresham and, you know, all these, like, great technical wrestlers all got signed to various places. And, you know, not just in Ring of Honor, but there's plenty. Like Asher Hale, the former Anthony Henry, like just great wrestlers. That and J.D. Drake, his old partner and stuff. Like, there's a lot of really, really good technical wrestlers out there that are no longer on the indies or no longer, you know, signed. Or, you know, the point I'm trying to make. Mikowski, I think, can really fill those gaps. You know, he's one of those guys, you know, along with, you know, obviously Lou Moriarty, and, you know, there's a lot of speculation about his future. Daniel Makabe is another guy that, like, he's at the top of the chain as far as I'm concerned, like, as far as great technical wrestling. And he's a guy that, like, I really feel like Daniel Makabe, like, I haven't heard anything, but I really feel like Daniel Makabe has to be on people's radars. Lee Moriarty has a lot more buzz about him right now, for sure. Unquestionably. And Moriarty, you know, being the IWTV champion, you know, recently lost that belt to Wheeler Yuta. And the world of independent wrestling is very, very, very high on Lee Moriarty right now, as they should be, by the way. Like, Moriarty's an incredible talent. I think he's going to make a ton of money in wrestling. I've heard about where he apparently is heading, and if that's the case, I'm excited for him. I'm very excited for him, and I cannot stress how awesome I think it is that, you know, these guys, just the talent level is shining through, and it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it, doesn't matter what your age is, doesn't matter what your race is, doesn't matter anything, right? Like, the talent right now is really, really shining through, and Moriarty is a guy really popped on everyone's radar big time over the last probably year or two, maybe even, you know, I'd say he was really hitting my radar hard like a year ago, and for him to just skyrocket to the top of indie wrestling the way he has has just been so, so, so impressive. And whatever's next for him, I think he's going to kill it wherever he goes, because he's just that talented. And that said, Dana Makabe is someone I feel the same exact way about. He just hasn't been as active and have as much, I guess, kind of shine lately. But with the pandemic, you know, us kind of ending that and moving on to a more normal life, I think Makabe could hopefully be more active this year. And he's going to be that next guy up, I think, as far as technical wrestlers are concerned. He's insanely talented. So all that said, Matt Mikowski, that's a big shout out to him. Those are the kind of shoes that I feel like Matt Mikowski can fill. And that's really one of the biggest compliments I can give a wrestler, to be honest. And his opponent, Matthew Justice, a dude who is at that tippy top of the food chain. I talk about the indie wrestling totem pole on here all the time. He's been at the tippy top of that totem pole for a long time now. And I love he's still out on the indies, though. Like, I love that, you know, he does so much stuff with GCW. His matches are always guaranteed to, you'll see something crazy. You'll see someone either fall off something high or jump off something that's really high up, or you'll crash through something, crazy dives. Matthew Justice is really the person. It's hard to articulate, but, and this is one of the biggest compliments I can give someone as well, to be honest. He's like my generation of guys who were fans of ECW growing up, but were too young to obviously be in ECW. But he's like carrying on the spirit of ECW on the independents, is how I feel about Matthew Justice. Like, he wasn't a part of ECW, but you could tell he was clearly a big fan of ECW. And he's kind of like, he isn't out there like, you know, getting people to do ECW chants. Like, it's not like he's representing ECW, but it's that same vibe. It's like when he comes out to Walk by Pantera, like him and the SGC and stuff. I mean, it's like, that's gotta be tied in. I mean, that was Rob Van Dam's theme music, iconic theme music from ECW. Like Matthew Justice, the stuff that he does and the risks that he takes and the style of wrestling, it just screams old school ECW to me. And I just think that's awesome. So huge shout out to Matt Mikowski and Matthew Justice. And like I said, the main event of the show, we had Bobby Beverly, a.k.a. the Bev, taking on the Hoodfoot, also known as Mo Atlas. I'm a big fan of Hoodfoot. The Bev has been growing on me. I got to admit it. I was not a huge fan of Bobby Beverly when I started watching Paradigm Pro. This would have been, I don't know, maybe sometime last year is when I started watching the company, at least on a more regular basis. And Bobby Beverly had won this tournament that I felt like he should not have won, mainly because of the way he won and also all these other people that I thought should have won the tournament, just because I was a bigger fan of theirs, to be completely honest. And he was with the Forgotten Fight Club with Flash Thompson and their manager, who I can never remember his name, but like, big dude who, like, just really, I don't think really adds much to the group, if I'm being honest. The whole Forgotten Fight team thing just was not for me. And Bev just didn't do a whole lot for me. He just really didn't. But he's always been heavily, heavily pushed in Paradigm Pro as, like, their top attraction. And I just never really understood it, to be honest. But the more that he's been with, he recently, you know, over the last few months, has joined 440, which is GCW stable. And don't know what the future is with RSP and GCW with that whole storyline that they got going on. But, you know, 440, the team of Ricky Shane Page, Eric Ryan, Gregory Iron, Atticus Kogar. I feel like I'm missing somebody. Obviously, the Bev just mentioned. I hope I'm not missing anyone in there. I can't remember who I've already said. But the point is, the Bev has been with 440 lately. And he's a... you know, he's fit in really well with them. He really has. So I got to give him credit, and he has been improving, in my opinion, since like the first times I was watching him. So I like seeing that. You know, I really try to, I don't know if pride myself on it is the right way of saying it, but like I really do my best to be able to change my mind. You know, like if there's somebody that I'm not a huge fan of, like I'll give them a bunch of tries. Like I'll watch them a bunch of times in different settings with different people, like different venues, different matches, different crowds, you know. And sometimes, you know, my mind can really be changed. And guys like, you know, Lord Crew and Bobby Beverly being good examples on this show, and honestly Chase Holiday being one as well, just wrestlers that I just, you know, it's taken me a minute to come around on, but like slowly but surely we're getting there, you know. So shout out to the Bev. You know, I'm still getting there, but major improvements, in my opinion. And Mo Atlas, the Hoodfoot, he's a dude who I've been talking really highly about for quite a while now. Real big dude, hits super hard, does really great power moves, moves around surprisingly well for a guy of his size, and a guy that I think really, honestly, could be pretty big at the next level. Like, just because he does present something different and he is so big, you know, he's just one of these guys who he looks like he'd be really tough to fight or really tough to knock around or ever be able to pin or submit, right? Like he's just a tough dude who throws hard and throws people around and he has a, you know, the way he carries himself, I really like. And I love a lot of the time he'll wear this gigantic do-rag, which it's almost impossible for me to like really explain or do justice to, but like obviously it sits on his head, but it goes all the way down like a cape and like all the way onto the ground. Like the thing's just humongous. So that also kind of sets him apart as well. He's doing stuff that I've never really seen before. So yeah, big fan of the Hoodfoot. So and Hoodfoot, by the way, is like a really major guy for Paradigm Pro as well. Like he's one of when I think of Paradigm Pro, I immediately think of guys like Bobby Beverly because of the position he's, you know, constantly been in. And Hoodfoot is another guy I'm always thinking of with Paradigm because he's constantly, you know, either in the main event or like one of the most heavily featured guys and stuff. So Really good stuff. So once again, great show. A lot of amazing talent on this one, and a lot of really great future talent. People that I think you're going to be seeing at that quote unquote next level, probably sooner than later. Some of these names, and some of them are already there, right? Like some of these names with MLW already, and you know have worked in other places and stuff. You know, have had opportunities in places like NXT and whatnot. So yeah, great stuff. Once again, that's Paradigm Pro Wrestling's Terminal Combat. It's available right now on independentwrestling.tv. If you want to use my code, use code FIGHTTALK, FIGHTTALK, always one word, no spaces. Just go to IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv. Use that code and it helps me out a lot. So I really, really appreciate that. Moving on, we have 205 Live results. Show started off with Asher Hale defeating Tony Nese. Got the win. This was really nice. Like, basically the finish of the match was Hale fakes a... So, for those of you who may not know, Anthony Henry, who's now Asher Hale, he is a great technical wrestler. I just talked about that, you know, a minute ago. But he's also got really, really great striking, really incorporates mixed martial arts really well into his matches, but also does great high flying, and he's very fast. He moves very quick, it's hard to explain, very, very, very athletic, you know, and Asher Hale, he like fakes a low kick on Tony Nese, and Tony Nese goes to block it, and Hale hits him with a head kick, which I just thought was, it just came across really, really nice. This is also after Hale had done Hale and Nese killed it. Nese hit like a nice moonsault. They were all over the place. I mean, this was a really, really good match in my opinion. This whole show was really good, these two matches. I've been saying that for weeks now. 205 Live is honestly one of the best, if you want to talk just actual in-ring wrestling shows, it's one of the best shows right now. It really is. Especially for just a half hour long. I might sound like I'm exaggerating. These are awesome half hour shows. Like, if you're talking just strictly in-ring wrestling and also developing new talent, that, you know, new talent to most eyes, you know, obviously we've been seeing Hale on the indies for years, if you've been keeping up with that. Same with Ari Sterling, who we'll talk about in a second. But anyway, once again, the finish of the match was really good. Hale hits that head kick, and then he winds up putting Tony Nese in a bulldog choke and, like, throws him over the top of his body and then locks it down on the ground. It was really, really good. And I like that Hale's using that as a finisher. I like that a lot. So I liked everything about this. Thought the match was really solid. I think that Tony Nese is serving his role perfectly within 205 Live right now. Like, he's being used right now to continue to build the next generation of guys. Him and Daivari, they're doing the same thing right now. And they're both doing it really well because the matches have been really good. They're getting these guys more over, and I can't say enough good things about Asher Hale. And once again, Tony Nese, this was just really, really solid match. And then same with the main event. We had Ari Sterling, the former Alex Zane, defeating Arya Daivari. Another great match, back and forth. Sterling still doing his kind of his crazy offense. He very video game-esque. Like the moveset that he uses is honestly, it's pretty much straight out of a video game. Like, I really don't know how else to really explain it. Very entertaining guy. And Daivari, similar to Nese, doing a great job. Like, doing a great job making Sterling look good, doing a great job continuing to put over this next generation of these younger stars, you know, on 205 Live. Especially on a show where, you know, Kushida's the champion and he's nowhere to be found. Like, I don't think he's appeared on 205 Live once since winning the title. So, you know, at least this show, since it has no, like, real consequence in the grand scheme of things, and the champion's not going to be there, at least they're providing two solid matches. They've been doing it consistently for weeks now. Just two solid matches, half hour long. And the way that Sterling won this match was awesome, because he basically hit a spiral tap, which was AJ Styles' finisher back in the early days of TNA wrestling. And to see anyone even hit that move is impressive. And he to be fair, he did miss Daivari a little bit, but to be completely honest. But the fact that he did the move off the top, and as long as he can get that down and really, really make the connection on the ground look a little bit better, I think that's an incredible move for Sterling to use as a finisher. Because the I can't remember what he called that other move, like the Baja 86, I think is what he called the move he'd been using as his finisher lately, the sidewalk slam front flip thing that he does. But I would much rather see Ari Sterling using the spiral tap as his finisher, because especially with crowds coming back and stuff, like that move is going to get really, really over because AJ doesn't use it anymore. So the WWE audience, I don't know if the WWE audience has ever even really seen that move unless they were watching AJ, you know, in his earlier career. So I think this is all awesome stuff. Huge fan of Ari Sterling, huge fan of Asher Hale. And I'm very, very happy that NXT/WWE is really pushing the two of them and really highlighting them on 205 Live. And I hope that that leads to, I'd imagine that, you know, I think that Ari Sterling has been a little bit more highlighted, and I see him as being a real threat to Kushida a little bit sooner, and I think that's going to come pretty soon, to be honest. So I am looking forward to seeing Sterling versus Kushida if it happens soon. But I really want to see, you know, I don't watch the weekly NXT shows lately, but if they started having Asher Hale on regular and they started having Ari Sterling on regular and they're having like really good, you know, cruiserweight matches, especially because obviously I'm watching 205 Live every week to cover it here on this show, that's going to be a good driving force to get me back into watching NXT. And I know that might sound kind of crazy because of all the other great talent on NXT, but I'm just at a kind of a point where I'm kind of lukewarm on Karrion Kross, if I'm being honest. Finn Balor, I feel like, is kind of played out on NXT. Like, he's probably better served to go back to Raw or SmackDown. You know, Cool Kyle, like, need I say more? I mean, I know there's people that like the gimmick, but it's just too little kid for me, for especially for a show like NXT and a person like Kyle O'Reilly, who's just so good at being just an ass kicker. I just don't think he needs to do the corny gimmick. And like, once again, like Adam Cole, like what's left for him to do there? Like all these guys that I think are great talents, I just feel like they're really played out in NXT. Tommaso Ciampa, another good example. Johnny Gargano, they're all just kind of played out in NXT, in my opinion. But if you got more guys like Asher Hale and Ari Sterling on there and got them really good storylines and really pushed them, those kind of guys like Curt Stallion, whenever he comes back from injury, you know, I'd be very, very interested in that, and I'd probably start watching again on a regular basis. And speaking of NXT, NXT UK, we got the results for that show right now. Nathan Frazier over Shaw Samuels in the opener. Really good stuff. They had some storyline progression here because Samuels, of course, being the friend of Noam Dar. Noam Dar was on the outside during the match and tried to get involved, winds up getting ejected by the referee. Nathan Frazier hits a sweet springboard, you know, reverse DDT into a final cut, and then hits his frog splash, which is always a really, really nice frog splash to get the 1-2-3. More of the same, you know, from Nathan Frazier. I was a big fan of his when he was Ben Carter out on the indies, and he's a guy who I think they need to just slowly and steadily just continue to push, and that seems exactly like what they're doing. I think the way that they've handled him so far has been really, really well done, and with a little bit more momentum, a little bit more build, a little bit more wins, I could really see him contending for the NXT UK Championship. And I said it from the day he signed with the WWE, I really want to see Nathan Frazier versus Walter for that title. I would imagine Walter would probably win, but I think stylistically, that's a totally different type of matchup than we've seen Walter have for that title, and I think Frazier would definitely rise to the occasion. So big shout out to Nathan Frazier for that W there. And also worth mentioning, next week we're going to have Noam Dar taking on Ilya Dragunov. They've been building that up for a couple weeks, and that finally happens on next week's episode of 205, or not 205 Live, NXT UK. After that, we had Tiamon defeating Ashton Smith, got the win with the crossface for the tap-out victory. After the match, Oliver Carter comes out to help fight off Tiamon from, because he was attacking Ashton after the match. So once again, Oliver Carter comes out for the save. After that, we got a video package for Sada Mora, who's going to be taking on Kaylee Ray. And I think that Sada Mora's time is probably, It's probably now. Like, they're wrestling for the title in 2 weeks, and they've already wrestled for it before. I feel like if they're going to give Sana more another shot at the belt, you probably need to pull the trigger. Kaylee Ray has been a great champion. I don't know who else would really be a great option to take the belt from her. That'd be a better option than Sada Mora right now. And something I really loved about the video package, they actually showed Sada Mora's, like, some of her highlights from when she was in WCW, which, like, what a flashback for someone like me who was such a big WCW fan back in the day. Like, just wild that she's even still wrestling, and she's still wrestling at a high level, and I think she'll be really over when they get fans back. And Kaylee Ray, like, I wouldn't be upset at all if Kaylee Ray retained the title, by the way. Once again, I think she's been a very good champion for them. She's had a good title run, and she's had good matches and some good stories with that belt. But I just feel like Sada Mora's time is now. And if not, then when? And if not, like, why would you push her the way that you have, unless, like, she's just going to be there for the short term, which I doubt is the case. So, that said, I am looking forward to their match in 2 weeks. Kaylee Ray versus Miko Sada Mora. After that, we had Kenny Williams defeating Andy Wild. Got the win with the Bulldog Driver for the 1-2-3. Not a whole lot to talk about here. Just continuing to build Kenny Williams. And in the main event of the show, we had Trent Seven defeating Sam Gradwell. Got the win. This was a really good match, in my opinion, and I really liked the finish. Trent Seven hits before he hits the lariat, Gradwell comes off the top to go for a headbutt. And Trent gets his feet up. So Gradwell's head hits his feet, and that leads into Seven hitting the six-star lariat, gets a 1-2 kick out, but then picks him right up, hits him with the Birminghammer, which I think is just a great finishing move, and obviously used to be known as the Birminghammer, great play on words. But in the way that Trent hits it is very safe. Like, he basically throws people onto their stomachs. The old Burning Hammer, like the really old school version, was more like just throwing people on their heads. And the way that Trent Seven hits his Birminghammer, I think is very well done. Very crisp, good match. I like seeing Seven get the win, and he needed it, you know, with the continued progression and, you know, recent Heritage Cup win for Tyler Bate. I was kind of afraid that Trent Seven was going to get kind of lost in the mix. You know, he was kind of doing the cruiserweight thing for a second, and that seems to not be the case anymore, and didn't really know what direction Trent Seven was going to go in, but this big win over Sam Gradwell in the main event, I feel like they have some plans going forward for Trent Seven, and I could see him and Tyler Bate maybe for that Heritage Cup. Like, Trent Seven maybe turns on him, maybe. I mean, I don't necessarily want to see the two of them feuding, because I like them as a team and I like them as allies and friends, but, like, I mean, how much is there left to do with the two of them being buddy-buddy, you know what I mean? Like, maybe this is the time for Trent Seven's gaining momentum again. Maybe he turns on Tyler Bate soon. Who knows? But regardless, that was a good episode of NXT UK. I highly recommend it. Moving on, we have Impact Wrestling results. As always, make sure on Thursday nights to come onto the Twitch channel that me, Joel Pearl, and most of the time, or sometimes I should say, Jeremy Lambert's on with us. We have a revolving third on our guest panel, however you would say that. This past week we had Rob Wilkins on. It was a really fun show. So yeah, check it out every Thursday, twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. We watch the show live, we talk about life, we talk about wrestling, we talk about whatever. And we just kind of kick back and watch Impact. We put the show on so everyone can watch Impact, like, while we're watching it. And you see us on the screen kind of giving our thoughts and interacting with the chat and stuff. It's a really good time. So these are the highlights from the show this past week. I started off with a promo where Sami Callihan is basically trying to get a championship match against Kenny Omega. And, yeah, it's just basically the story that's building, because I don't want to have to talk about all this stuff segment by segment. The Good Brothers and Kenny are obviously, they're aligned, and Sami Callihan wants Kenny Omega, and I don't know why Sami Callihan should get a shot at him. Like, I've said it a lot on our live streams, Sami Callihan has been, like, I think I think we went back and we looked, and he hasn't won on pay-per-view in the last, like, 2 or 3 years. Like, no joke. Except for, like, one match against Sam Beal, I believe it was. And that was, like, a total jobber squash match type scenario. So, I don't know why Sami Callihan would have any right to getting a world title match. Just makes no sense to me. And they're still trying to build this. And they're also teasing, you know, Moose and Sami being able to coexist. And there's going to be a main event match later on this show where Sami and Moose are taking on the Good Brothers. So I'll just try to do my best to paraphrase all of that stuff and kind of give you the lowdown on where we're at with that story. Moving on, we had TJP and Fall of Baugh defeating Josh Alexander and Petey Williams. Finish came when Baugh hit a Samoan drop and then TJP came off the top for the Black Mamba Splash for the 1-2-3. We also on the show, this is a little out of order, but we also found out on the show that next week for BTI, they're going to be doing a 1 hour Ironman match, TJP versus Josh Alexander for the X Division title, which I think is going to be a really, really, really good match. And I think we're going to actually go live an hour early on Twitch next week so that we can watch that as well. So once again, twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. If you're following me on Twitter at @FightTalk_, I'll make sure to put out links whenever we go live. So next up on the show, we had W. Morrissey cuts a really, really good promo about how the wrestling world turned on him when he left the WWE and when he's going through his mental health issues and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be him and Rich Swann at Against All Odds, and that match is going to be really, really good in my opinion. I've said this before and I'll say it again, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who just thinks that all these guys that are like 7 feet tall should just get just monster pushes in pro wrestling. But when you're a guy who looks the way Cass does, when you're as athletic as he is, if he has his head on straight and he has kind of his demons and issues, you know, he's taking care of that and he's at a good place in his life, you know, physically and mentally. That's the kind of dude who, like, you do push that guy. Like, he can talk. His mic skills are getting increasingly better. He's solid enough in the ring. Like, he's not a guy who's by any means bad, but he is unquestionably very athletic, especially for a guy his size. I mean, he moves around very, very well, and he's a guy who, he is charismatic. I really think that Impact would be smart to heavily push W. Morrissey if he's going to be with the company in the short term, especially. After that, we had a 10-woman knockouts tag team match where Rosemary, Jordan Grace, Rachel Ellering, Tennille Dashwood, and Havoc defeated the team of Deonna Purrazzo, Kimberly, Susan, and Fire and Flava. The finish was very surprising for me, actually. Rosemary hits the wing clipper on Deonna Purrazzo and pins the champion for the 1-2-3. So, they're, you know, I could definitely see them doing Rosemary and Deonna soon for the belt. The longer-term play, most likely for Slammiversary, would be Deonna versus Taylor Wilde. That seems like where they're heading. But I think that Rosemary versus Deonna in the interim, that's a good option. And I don't like seeing Deonna get pinned. I don't like that idea. There's plenty of, I mean, Susan. Like, Susan was in this match. That's kind of her job and her gimmick, as Susan is to take the L. You know, obviously, Sue Young, that's a different story, but when it's Susan, she should just be losing, especially when Deonna Purrazzo's on her team. But with that said, it's obviously meant to progress the storyline, and I would not be surprised if we got Purrazzo and Rosemary very, very soon. I don't know if it's been announced or not. It is very possible it's already been announced, but I'd imagine that's the Against All Odds match. After that, we had Violent by Design. They come out and cut a promo, and Kojima walks out to the ring and winds up challenging Joe Doering for a match at Against All Odds, which I think is awesome. That's a great matchup. That totally makes sense. Like, if you got Kojima, why not do New Japan versus All Japan, basically. So, great stuff. That's going to be a fun match. I like that a lot. We also had Brian Myers. He's doing an interview, and Sam Beal accidentally, like, gets in the interview, and Brian Myers winds up challenging him to a match, and, like, whatever. The whole Myers-Cardona stuff, I'm just very, very over it on screen. They're great on YouTube. They're very good wrestlers as well. I just can't get into it. After that, we had Decay defeating Johnny Swinger and Hernandez. The finish came when Black Taurus hit Hernandez with a spear, and then was Crazy Steve hit his jumping DDT on Johnny Swinger to get the 1-2-3. Not a whole lot to talk about with this match, but obviously, you know, Black Taurus, very, very impressive in the ring. There's obviously kind of a ceiling to that character, but his in-ring work is very, very good. And Crazy Steve, very impressive, especially for a guy who apparently has, like, no vision. So, you know, always impressive to see Crazy Steve. Hernandez, I can take or leave at this point. He's just kind of there. I hate to say that. He's a guy who had a lot of potential, had some really good years, but, like, he's just kind of there at this point. And Johnny Swinger, surprisingly, doing the best work of his entire career. He's been in the wrestling business for, like, at least 2 decades, and completely different gimmick now than what he used to do, and everything's different, but he's, like I said, probably doing the best work of his entire career right now. And in the main event of the show, we had the Good Brothers defeating Sami Callihan and Moose. The finish came when the Good Brothers hit Sami Callihan with a magic killer to get the 1-2-3. After the match, Moose spears Sami Callihan, which I really like seeing, because it establishes a couple things. It establishes that one of the two is basically turning heel and or babyface. So I think it would definitely be smart for Moose to be a face heading into a match with Kenny Omega, who's definitely the heel, especially in the scenario where Moose is trying to win the title to bring it back to Impact Wrestling. So Moose pinning or spearing Sammy, I think, is great. Sammy also looks like he's kind of becoming a pseudo babyface because he wants to fight Kenny for the title as well. We'll see where all that goes, but we know for sure is we have Moose versus Kenny Omega at Against All Odds for the title in a match that I'm really, really, really looking forward to. Moving on, we have some news from Major League Wrestling. They had their draft round 2 this past week, and some signings that we definitely need to note here. Last week, we had Davey Richards, Gina Medina, King Muertes, the Von Erichs. They were all announced from the open draft of round 1. This week, we found out Gringo Loco, King Mo, and Tom Lawler are all announced that they're going to be heading back to MLW for the next season. But the big news to come out of this was that MLW has drafted and signed Alex Kane. And Alex Kane is a guy who I've been talking very highly of lately. I think even last week, I probably talked about him for a solid probably 5 minutes alone, and it turned out that, what do you know, he signed with MLW that week, so, or this past week, you know, so very, very happy to see this. A guy with all the talent in the world, still very young, still very kind of new, a new face and a new name in the world of wrestling, somebody who most people who watch MLW are probably not going to even know of. He's very similar in a lot of ways to Calvin Tankman. As far as, like, if you are paying attention to the indies, like, you definitely know who he is. But if you don't really pay much attention to the indies, but you do watch MLW, he's going to be, like, this brand new guy that you're like, wait a second, where's this guy been? That's how I feel about Alex Kane. He'll make an immediate impact in that company. The suplex assassin, great in the ring, charismatic, the way he carries himself, I'm a very big fan of. He got a very good look. A guy who's done great work in action wrestling, done great work in SUP recently. I mean, he's very, very, very talented. He was on that Paradigm show I was just talking about, my recommended show from this podcast. So I cannot say enough good things about Alex Kane. He's a guy that I figured would either jump the pack and get an opportunity really soon or become basically one of the next big main event guys in independent wrestling. And the fact that he is now signed to Major League Wrestling, I just think that's absolutely incredible. Kudos to MLW for making that signing, and huge shout out to Alex Kane for signing that dotted line, because I think he's going to fit like a glove in MLW. This was a you know, Davey Richards I was happy about for different reasons. Like, I think Davey Richards is a great signing, and he's one of the best technical wrestlers, one of the best just overall just in-ring workers of, you know, the kind of like the 2000s era, like the 2010s era, I guess, if you will. But Alex Kane is like a, like I said, he's going to be a relatively unknown, and I think he's just going to man, what a great signing for MLW. I can't say enough good things about that one. So huge shout out to Alex Kane. And if you haven't already, once again, check out independentwrestling.tv, use code Fight Talk. There's a ton of Alex Kane matches on that platform, and I would highly recommend it. If you're not familiar with him already, get familiar soon, because he's going to be a guy who I think is going to do really big things in MLW, and there's going to be a lot of eyes on him. Up next, we have results for Ring of Honor. Had two matches on this show. Started off with a pure rules match, Fred Yehi defeating Rocky Romero, and a really good match. This one ended with less than a minute left in the match, and Fred Yehi wound up getting the victory. Basically, what winds up happening towards the end, Rocky Romero is going for his armbar, you know, his finisher, to try to get Yehi to tap out. Yehi starts punching him in the stomach, like to get out of the submission hold, which is legal in pure rules because he's not striking to the head with the closed fist, but he's going to the body. And I just thought it was all really well done how it all worked out. And then Yehi hits a couple, you know, big moves like an elbow strike, a running kick. And winds up getting Rocky Romero in the Koji clutch, makes him tap out, like I said, with less than a minute left. So really good stuff there. I'm a huge fan of Fred Yehi. I was a big fan of his for probably about 3 years or so when he was out on the indies, like pre-Ring of Honor. And he's a guy I was saying for so long, like, man, if Ring of Honor needs more technical wrestlers, like Fred Yehi would just be perfect. And I love seeing what he's doing in the company right now. Very big fan. After that, Flip Gordon came out and wanted to challenge Roosh for the ROH title. EC3 winds up coming out instead, and it looks like we're going to be getting, you know, EC3 and Flip Gordon stuff going forward. And after that, the main event of the show, the Foundation, the team of Hot Sauce, Tracy Williams, and Rhett Titus, defeated the OGK, the Original Kingdom, the team of Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. The finish came when Rhett and Tracy hit like a barrage of moves kind of back to back that finished with Rhett Titus hitting a drop kick to the back of Matt Taven. And then when he was like half falling over, Tracy Williams got him right into a cradle pile driver. I can't remember if it was a cradle pile driver or a regular pile driver, but got it with the 1-2-3. And after the match, OGK is, they're like shaking hands with the Foundation, everyone showing each other respect. I thought this was a really, really good tag team match, by the way. This episode of Ring of Honor, I would highly recommend going out of your way to watch, because I think Yehi versus Romero was really good. And once again, this tag team main event, I think, was really, really good as well. And after the match, Taven and Bennett, they're still in the ring and they're bummed out about the loss. And then Vincent shows up on the screen and starts mocking Matt Taven. He says, "I am Matt Taven," which is really weird. And yeah, it was one of those things, you know, we find out that Vincent is the one who injured Matt Taven. He had an injured ankle in the match, and that did play a part in the finish. I probably should have mentioned that as well. Matt Taven's injured ankle led to the Foundation hitting the barrage of moves that led to the finish. But I mean, it was obviously, you know, it was pretty obvious it was Vincent from the beginning, right? So, I mean, there was no surprise there, but, you know, sometimes that's the right thing to do. You know, the predictable thing is the right thing to do. And Vincent and Taven going forward, and then you got Mike Bennett in the mix with the, you know, Original Kingdom and all that. So I'm interested. And I think that Ring of Honor had a really, really good show this week. Two really good matches. Moving on, we have National Wrestling Alliance results from their latest episode of Power. This is their last show, their go-home show, before When Shadows Fall. I'll be doing full predictions for that show next Sunday on the Weekender podcast. These are the quick results for NWA this week. We had the tag team titles on the line, Kratos and Stevens retaining the titles over the War Kings, Dane and Crimson. Dane and Crimson had won the rights to get the title shot on last week's episode of Power. After that, we had All This over Mims. All this kind of promo before the match as well. We had Thunder Rosa and Camille. That goes to a time limit draw, which just prolongs that whole thing, which, you know, Serena Deeb is going to be defending the NWA Championship against Riho tonight on the pre-show of All Out, or sorry, of all of Double or Nothing. And so for, you know, obviously I think it's pretty clear that Deeb's going to retain there. And, you know, Thunder Rosa and Camille, they're just stretching this out and prolonging this. At the end of the day, I think we all think Camille's going to win that title from Serena Deeb. And the more that she beats Thunder Rosa, the more it just kind of devalues Thunder Rosa. Once again, this was a time limit draw, but like eventually I think it's going to be, I mean, Camille already won the number one contendership. And that's what this whole story is about, is like, if Camille wins, then she, you know, she makes Thunder Rosa not be allowed to wrestle outside the NWA, which is a very odd stipulation. Instead of a loser leaves town match, they want to do loser has to stay here and can't be popular anywhere else match, which is strange. And once again, pretty clear Camille is going to be the one to win the title at some point soon anyway. So, you know, it just is what it is. Excuse me. And after that, we had Chris Adonis actually relinquishing the NWA National title. And the reason he did that is because he entered the number one contender battle royal for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. He winds up not winning the title, or not winning the battle royal, though. The winner winds up being Trevor Murdoch. And that's a good choice. It makes a lot of sense given the story over the last, you know, few weeks with Murdoch and all this and Strictly Business and all that stuff. So, you know, no problem there. After the match, Aldis actually attacks Murdoch, and then Murdoch winds up fighting him off. And Murdoch cuts a really good promo to end the show. And, you know, I think when they wrestle each other for the belt, I think that Aldis will most likely retain. But I think Trevor Murdoch is a good opponent. He's probably the right choice of all the options. And I think it'll be a solid match. But like I said, I do expect Nick Aldis to retain. But once again, big win for Trevor Murdoch. All right, next we got a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled, what's the title of this one? It is called God, I Love Those Shoes. Started off with the Young Bucks, you know, they're whining about getting their, what are they called, Air Dior shoes, their Jordans, stolen by Kingston and Moxley at Dynamite. We had a couple different segments from Ryan Nemeth during this one, the whole Hollywood pop quiz thing. He walked around on this show. He talked to Rebel. He asked if she knew if he was a spokesperson for Venmo. She didn't know. He's, you know, sad about it. We had Peter Avalon write a note to Leva Bates in a book, and he leaves the book on a park bench when Cesar Bernotti comes over to talk to him. Alex Reynolds winds up finding the book. He writes Alex Reynolds XO in it, and Avalon comes back to find the book, and it is no longer there because Reynolds has taken it. After that, in a very, very corny segment, we had Brandon Cutler talking to the Bunny, and she and him, you know, they haven't seen eye to eye in the past, and they've been kind of rude to each other, and she wants to make peace, and she's going to give him a brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart is the technical name of it. But instead, she throws it on the ground and steps on it. And then Cutler says, this is war. And she says that she's going to effing kill him. So, yeah, not a whole lot to talk about there. We had a backstage segment that was actually pretty funny. Trent is talking to Rocky Romero and talking to Romero about how he's his favorite partner ever. Like, better than Orange Cassidy and Tony Nese, Chuck Taylor, and so on. But it turns out that the rest of the group, OC, Chuck, Statlander, they're all standing there with sunglasses on. They wind up putting a pair on to Rocky Romero, and then they just stand there. John Silver, you know, comes into the room, and says it's Shades Day. And then all the members of Best Friends just take turns kicking him in the nuts. Pretty good stuff there. After that, we had, throughout the show, we had trick shots with Nick Jackson, but it's not worth really talking about because you can't visually see them. He does hit some really impressive shots, though, I'm not going to lie. And his reactions of him and his kids, I think, are really funny. We had Ryan Nemeth. He is talking to Trent and asking him if he knows that, you know, that he was on Pee-wee's Big Holiday, which was a movie years ago. I believe years ago. That might have been a more recent one. I'm not sure. I'm not too big on I don't know a whole lot about Pee-wee, to be honest. But basically, Trent's like, yeah, I know it was you because you told me it was you before we did this. And, you know, that's that. After that, we had Sammy Guevara talking with the Young Bucks. And he winds up having to put the BT title on the line, like, pretty much just on the spot. And they play, like, this little finger hockey game. And Brandon Cutler winds up beating Guevara for the belt. So the BT title is now back on Being the Elite. And Guevara tries to steal the AEW World Tag Team title belt and is unsuccessful and gets kicked out of the room. We had a pretty, this was a good segment, as usual, involved the Dark Order. They're in their hideout, and they're all doing drawings. And I didn't note every one of the drawings, but I'm trying to remember. They had, like Colt Cabana drew, I can't remember what he drew Team Taz. Somebody drew, actually, I think Evil Uno drew Team Taz. Colt Cabana drew, like, Sting's baseball bat with a couple people from the Dark Order. Ten wrote, like, something about, like, how do I know if I have a problem with, like, his nose, and what looks like cocaine, you know, under his nose. And then he, like, rips, he crumbles the paper up and throws it, and then just, like, snorts a big line. He's like, I don't have a problem. It was pretty funny. But the thing that really matters in this whole segment is Stu Grayson draws, like, this, like, perfect drawing of Anna Jay, and he's talking about the girl who he keeps seeing and, like, nobody else sees. And Hangman Page has also made a drawing. One of the drawings, by the way, was Five getting, literally just getting screwed by a horse. Like, just no joke, that was one of the drawings. But Hangman, you know, he's on a horse, and the rest of the Dark Order members are stick figures. Or I shouldn't say the rest of, the Dark Order members are stick figures. Hangman's on a horse. And then when Grayson is looking at his picture next to Hangman's picture, he realizes Hangman drew a little stick figure girl on his too. So he's like, wait a second, Hangman knows what I'm talking about. So they leave that for next week. But I actually really like that segment. After that, we had a BT mailbag. It's Best Friends along with Rocky Romero, who, you know, I wouldn't be mad if he was like a regular member of the group. He definitely fits in and has history with them. And there's not a whole lot to talk about with this one. They talk about their favorite cereals. They talk about their favorite birds. Probably the biggest question they answered is they're asked what superheroes they would be if they were in a superhero movie. Chuck Taylor says he'd be Star-Lord. And then he said that Orange Cassidy would be Groot. Rocky Romero would be Rocket Raccoon. Chris Statlander's Gamora. And Trent is Drax, I think, is what he winds up coming up with. After that, we had, this was just corny, we had J.D. Drake, Ryan Nemeth, Cesar Bononi. They're in a room, and they basically think they're doing yoga, but they're actually, they have a Kama Sutra book. Just not a whole lot to really talk about there. They wind up just going off to get food rather than doing the Kama Sutra stuff. And at the end of the show, a great promo by Matt Jackson. Really, really great. I cannot do it justice. I highly recommend you just watch this episode. If for no other reason, watch the episode for the last, like, 10 minutes of Matt Jackson just talking, because it just really, really, really good stuff. He's talking about their stolen Jordans. He's talking about how Eddie Kingston was, like, basically just, like, a low-level indie guy who would sit around smoking cigarettes while the Young Bucks were out there, like, stealing the show and becoming self-made millionaires and all this stuff. Just really, really good. He's talking about how, you know, if people think that they're not vicious, but they just went out there and retired or made the SCU, one of their biggest rivals, they made them split up and left Christopher Daniels lying in a pool of his own blood, one of their best friends. Like, if they're not brutal, why would they do that? He's talking about all the stuff people say online. I mean, it's just a really, really good promo that, once again, I just can't do justice to, but it helps, really, really helps build that story in the match tonight, Young Bucks versus Omega and Kingston for the tag team titles. I wish that promo would have been on Dynamite, but it's also one of the main reasons I think people should watch Being the Elite, so I get why they're putting it on this show. So, incredible promo by Matt Jackson to wrap it up. And really quick, before we get out of here, going to just give you some really quick predictions for AEW's Double or Nothing, since the show is tonight, and I want my predictions out there on the record on this podcast as well. If you want full predictions, I did a show with Jesse Davin on the Jesse Davin YouTube channel, JSSIDAVIN. Also did a prediction show with Doug, RVD Tito for Life. Check out that YouTube channel, RVD Tito, the number 4 LIFE. So there's all that in the audio form on the Fight Talk podcast feed. But these are my quick predictions for Double or Nothing. I've got Serena Deeb over Riho to retain the NWA Women's Championship. I got the Young Bucks over Mox and Kingston to retain the tag team titles. I've got Sting and Darby Allin over Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. I've got the Pinnacle over the Inner Circle. I've got Miro over Lance Archer to retain the TNT title. I've got Hangman Page over Brian Cage. I've got Christian Cage winning the Casino Battle Royal for a future shot at the AEW World title. I've got Cody Rhodes over Anthony Ogogo, the American Dream Cody Rhodes. I've got Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, winning the AEW World Women's Championship from Hikaru Shida. I've got Kenny Omega retaining the AEW World Championship against Orange Cassidy and Pac in a triple threat match to close off the show. So that's my predictions for Double or Nothing, and that has been the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. If you want to shoot me a follow, please do on Twitter at @FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. If you don't mind giving me a like right here on Fightful Select, I very much appreciate it. Just right down below where you're hearing this podcast, hit that like button. Much appreciated. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.